The following program is produced and furnished in conjunction with John Gilroy, managing partner of the Oakmont Group, which is entirely responsible for its content.
Welcome to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy, managing partner of the Oakmont Group. Every week, John speaks with public and private sector IT experts about some of the IT trends and challenges facing agencies and industry. Now, your host, John Gilroy.
Welcome to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy here on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. In the studio, we have Henry Sinkowitz, Chief Innovation and Revenue Officer for a company called Secure Channels, with an S on the end. That's securechannels.com. Henry, how are you today?
John, I'm doing great. It's another wonderful day here in Washington. It's always good to see you. At any of these events that we attend.
Another wonderful day in Washington. You should have your own radio show. Wonderful day in Washington. Here in Federal News Radio.
No, because it is. I mean, talk about, like, in this whole space where talk about a great place to be.
I think so, too. So Henry and I teach at this little school down the road called Georgetown, and they had an event on cybersecurity. It was a month ago. And Henry was in the panel, and he was dazzling the audience. I figured, come on in the radio studio and dazzle the radio studio. He said, well, he's a little shy, but maybe he'll force himself to do something. So I wanted Henry to come in because if you look at Henry's background, I'll let you tell you about the background. I mean, this guy, I went to his LinkedIn profile, and I kept scrolling, and my mouse broke. I mean, he's got, like, you know, line after line after line after line, and oh, yeah. 23 years in the Army. It was like a line item. And then an airline and this and that. And I'm going, this guy's got so many good perspectives. And I think if my listeners can benefit from someone's perspective from all these different angles and high-level responsibility, and he started off in low-level responsibility, so he knows a whole lot about cybersecurity and the federal government and acquisition reform. And that's why I brought him in here, give some ideas of what his company can do, Secure Channels. But why don't you tell them, give me 30 seconds on your background if you can.
I don't know if I can ever do 30 seconds. I mean, I've just been fortunate, John. I mean, I started my whole career, my professional career, as a young Army second lieutenant, infantry kind of guy. Transferred into the Signal Corps.
Tough start.
And just, well, at my fifth day as a young lieutenant, I was lying at my first duty station. I was lying on an ambush in the DMZ in the snow, trying to hurt people.
In Korea.
Yeah. Wow. I mean, it was the December of '85. It was just an interesting place to be. And then a few years into it, branch transferred into the Signal Corps. The Army popped me through a year of training, went back to Korea for another year, then plopped it to a place called Fort Ritchie, Maryland, which is where I got pulled into both DISA and the technology world, because at that point in time, it was, how are we transforming? And what I've told my students, I've told colleagues, I've told all sorts of people, if anyone did quite the stuff that I did at that point in time in my career, I'd either pull their security clearance or throw them in jail. No, because, I mean, there were no rules. And at that point in time, you were trying to figure things out, much like we're trying to do again.
It was personal computer days, yeah. And come as you are, eating the car, well, and sure, well, unlocked,
or,
sure.
Oh, yeah, no, or it's like, oh, let me go. I don't know how to do this, but I need a network connection. Let me go into my tech control, buy a firewall, buy a router off the web from my contractor, slap it in and learn how to program it while using a DoD network or doing the same thing with the firewall.
So I want my listeners who are the second lieutenants who are listening to this to know, look, Henry didn't start off on top. He was just a regular, normal person. He had to fight his way up and maybe had some talent and skill and luck, and you went all the way up to a high-level position at DISA. I mean, this is a great story for my audience.
Yeah, I mean, I was like the biggest security violation for a long time. Because every now and then, every night I would go there because I was a watch officer. I'd go there and fuddle, and they would revoke my password. Okay, well, the next day would call them up and say, please put it back on. And because I was trying to learn, and there was no way to learn. John, I mean, we met at Georgetown. I mean, it was a great event. And I have been very fortunate with the students that I have there. And quite frankly, I mean, that's what I tell them, is that we're all still learning this stuff. I mean, as one of the guys who helped write 8570, the whole DoD cyber education track, we didn't quite know, and that's why we have to change it. I mean, part of this is that you've got to take some of the risks, and you've got to learn as you do it.
Right. You get a resume, and the person says, yeah, I got 20 years of experience in Twitter. Well, no one's got 20 years of experience in Twitter. It's all new. The cybersecurity is all new. I mean, there are books that are written, and there's some real good books, and I think they're starting to be written. But, you know, it's all brand new, and people are learning and trying to understand it. In fact, here's the toss to you. You've got a book out now.
I've got a book called The Art of Cyber Conflict. And I was asked to write it, and what because there are former colleagues of mine who said we need to have a unclassified doctrinal piece on cybersecurity. And I would posit it's not a war, it's a conflict, because it's day in and day out. It is not pure military activities. It's also a large law enforcement. And yes, I use some of the broken windows and community policing theories in here because, if you make the ecosystem better and stronger, everything becomes safer. I mean, it's like vaccinating your kids. You may not have to your kids may never get one of the epidemic things, but it prevents everyone else's kids from getting them at the same time. So if you have good basic cyber hygiene, you're able to go there and prevent things from happening. And so I re-baseline Sun Tzu's Art of War as a way to just think about the problem of the why of cyber, not the how, not the here's a prescriptive. Although, like every good cyber book, I do say you need to change your passwords, because every cyber book has to have change your passwords in it. But there's this whole notion of why cyber is different, why Sun Tzu. I mean, I can go on for hours and hours on that.
I think it's good to know. This is someone who is a practitioner. It's almost like someone who's in the NFL, and he's right, so this is my experience in the NFL. I mean, your experience is such a wide range. I mean, from pulling cables in the early days to high levels at this end, and continue with your background. I mean, I stopped you there. Yeah. I mean, so you went on moved up and up.
Then I went into the reserves during the Cold War drawdown. Was fortunate. The acquisition regulations didn't apply to me. So one of my contractors hired me as their CIO. So my first job off of active duty was as the CIO for a 3,800-person IT company. Did that for a couple of years, another year at another smaller government contractor, and realized I would rather do something else. Went into the airline industry for 6 years as the as a corporate officer.
This is like Forrest Gump. Okay, yeah. This is a Forrest Gump across the table.
My next-door neighbor, seriously, my next-door neighbor loved that company. And she said, and the headhunter asked me about the job and was like, okay, this is interesting. And my next-door neighbor, over a couple glasses of wine, we chatted away, and she said, yeah, you really want to go there. And I was lucky again, because talk about the coolest problem set. I mean, it's a company called the Airline Tariff Publishing Company. Mm-hmm. And no offense to my former DISA colleagues, I would probably posit it is still my favorite job of all time. Hmm. We supported almost every carrier in the world. We had the most complex database and the modeling systems, legally able to trade with every country in the world, because you want to have central control of the tariffing, the pricing. So it's the pricing engine. How do you go there and do some incredible analytics across a global environment with a disenfranchised user population? Did that lead me nicely into what I was doing at DISA? Yeah. And did I apply all those lessons? Yes. Yeah.
Yeah. It's someone who has a very deep commercial experience, very deep experience in the federal government, starting with the Army and moving all the way up. So I think it's a great topic to start with. So your company you work for now is called Secure Channels, based in California. Mm-hmm. So what does Secure Channels do?
Oh, gosh. We do a few really interesting things, which is why it's been a compelling journey to go there. Because when you think of this notion of cyber agency, I'm being responsible, Secure Channels directly addresses this notion of how do you protect your own data? Because it is your data, wherever it is, whenever it is, and we all have to have responsibility for protecting it. And you look at the breaches that have been going on, and it's all about the data. It's not, the infrastructure is there, and yes, there are malwares and there are APTs and a lot of other things going on, but it's all about extracting data. And if you can put real encryption and make encryption easier and try to position organizations for the quantum computing type world encryption, and I'm not saying that anyone is there yet, including us, but the question is, how do you start thinking about making sure you're able to position an organization for the future and where the problems are going to be?
We're going to have to take a little break, but I want to tease something up here. Years ago, I had to take all these silly tests. You take a test to get a thing after your name plus and all this kind of stuff and where the letters happen to be. And I learned that a secure channel was something that was like would protect people from listening to your telephone call or communication. And a confidential channel was something that helped you maybe move data back and forth. Uh-huh. And so maybe take a break, come back, and maybe define this term secure channel and see how it applies to my listeners and the data they're trying to protect or the conversations they're trying to protect. See what angle it really takes with this. Let's take a break and bring it back now. You are listening to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy here on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Our guest, Henry Sinkowitz, Chief Innovation and Revenue Officer for Secure Channels. Welcome back to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy here on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. In the studio, we have Henry Sinkowitz, Chief Innovation and Revenue Officer for a company called Secure Channels. Before the break, I try to come to a definition of this whole concept of a secure channel. And I toss to you, tell me what a secure channel is and how did this company get this name?
Sure. Actually, I think we've got the name because it's just an intriguing proposition. The question becomes, how do you, in the notion of data integrity and data security, you have that the entire governance model around it. I mean, you have encryption, you have DLP, you have digital rights management, you have identity management and the monitoring all in this wrapper that Gartner puts out as the data security governance model. And you pull that apart a little bit and you realize, okay, we've got confidentiality, integrity, and availability as the normal pyramid of data security.
I love the CIA.
Yeah. Well, we've got multiple CIAs. We've got CIA across the river.
We got a CIA in the CIA.
And we've got the Culinary Institute of America. And yeah. then in our data world, we've got the CIA that seems to matter to us more immediately. We secure channels for a lot of the stuff we do, which is really taking and enhancing enterprise encryption. I mean, we focus in on this integrity and confidentiality piece of it. It's the question of how do you ensure that you actually control your data? And we've got things and we've got patents out there on a thing called Paradox Box. And it's not
press release just released in November. Yeah. Press release, Justin.
Oh well, and we're doing some really other fun things because we're an Irvine, California based company, the Orange County. We just also had a press release on putting together an entertainment secure operation center on helping the entertainment industry talk back and forth in a secure fashion. And Sean Ridley, who is the producer of Get Out, is one of the leads on it with us. And so we're really excited where we think we're going with
this. Everyone talks in this town about a SOC. This is an ESOC. This is an entertainment SOC.
It is. But for us, the notion on that Paradox Box, just doing the encryption side of it all, I mean, what we're trying to do is make it easier to protect endpoints, encrypting virtual containers, hidden containers, entire drives, storage spaces, cloud, enterprise, but making it easy. Because if you look at it, so many companies put encryption stuff out there, but the problem becomes it's really difficult to use. And we're trying to get through this concurrent with making sure that we're able to allow multiple levels of encryption happening concurrently. If we all remember the old triple DES world, I mean, it worked really well on so many levels, but the AES standards obviously overwhelmed them. What was nice, though, is this notion of layering encryption and then putting additional encryption algorithms in the middle of it all. And that's what we do, and there's a lot of information out on our website about it. I mean, but what we really enjoyed about it, John, this is the cautious side coming out, is that we've gone through the proofing, and we should have available for release in the very near future the mathematical proofs on saying, hey, this stuff actually does provide about a 50% increase in bitwise security. And this is not us saying it. Sorry, I mean, you can look at all the marketing hype around this space. The question became, how do we mathematically prove it and have some of the most respected researchers in the world doing it for us. And we had the first proof done, and then we've got three other independent proofs from equally well-renowned cryptographers doing this for us. Because no offense to myself or anyone in the vendor community, you've got to trust the math and you've got to trust the experts.
Well, the best person I ever met in my life who explained cryptography to me was a guy with a master's degree in physics. Because he said, look, I can do the math. Let me show you the math.
Yeah.
And it was a math concept that a physicist, I understand this, here's how you do it.
Yeah.
And that's what it is. If it does it or can't, you can prove it mathematically.
Right. And the thing is, you've got to be really cautious as you're going out with this stuff, because you can't mess it up. Because if you mess it up, you can take a company's data and completely and totally hose it forever and ever and ever. Or you allow an individual to do encryption of their data without having an enterprise encryption format. So you walk away and say, okay, John, you've just left Fed News Radio. And yeah, by the way, you've encrypted everything. I can't grab that data. That's a dangerous place for companies to be in this day and age, because you look at what's happening just on that side of the world.
So here's the phrase that pays. Went to your website. Here's the phrase that pays. Unmatched security solutions for the digital ecosystem.
Yep.
That's the phrase that pays. Yeah. So
and that's what we're trying to do.
So what is five-factor authentication?
Oh, yeah. That's,
here it is.
And you see, my technical guys always go all over me on this because, quite frankly, I at times am not that smart. I mean, because we look at possession factors. We look at fingerprints, iris, voice. We're working on video. We're doing biometrics. We're doing
geolocation.
Yeah, location-based stuff. And then at the same time, not just doing the traditional geofencing, but we've also got proximity technology, so that you have to be within X number of meters of the sensor in order to be able to log on. So, which is really kind of neat. There's only some specific use cases for it, but I think we're well positioned to see where that goes in the future. I mean, right now our primary foci have been on this enhanced authentication stuff, the Paradox Box, Sub Rosa, which is our advancing authentication, which takes a whole series of file types and patterns, and it just increases complexity and key length. I mean, literally, you're able to go there, look at a picture, click on a few places inside that matrix, and you're able to generate key bit strengths. I mean, we've easily done it over 300,000 characters long, which just makes decrypting them really difficult.
Now, how many times have I turned to someone and my kids, what do I have to do? Draw you a picture? And then on the videos that you have there, you actually have a picture. It's like, as a matter of fact, we did draw you a picture, John, because you're that stupid.
And you're right, John. And the thing is, for us, we're letting you use your own picture. So it's not even us saying, hey, John, here's John and his grandkids and everyone else in his family. And he says, yes, and what you've clicked on is, you've clicked on your favorite grandkids in order. and you know what? That's the only one that you know of. Well, okay. I don't want to know that. I mean, I definitely don't think your grandkids want to know it, but you know it. And so we've tried to make it really easier to use. Again, how do you make something really complicated simple? The best UIs take the most engineering, but people end up using them.
That's the key. Like the iPhone. Yep. And if you go to YouTube and type in, it's a silly word, but it's a paradox box.
Yeah.
And you'll see a young guy showing it. It's a touch. It's almost like it's like Jeopardy or something. It's a touch screen. When you touch this, is he a picture of a dog? You touch this. And what's happening in the background is many, many complex algorithms playing in the back. But it looks this, touch this, touch this, touch this, and off we go.
Mm-hmm. Again, it's how do you take really complex mathematical operations, make them straightforward and simple, and then injectable inside an enterprise without re-architecting the entire enterprise.
I had a Russian cryptologist in the studio, and we're talking about things, you know, in the green room, and he says, you know, the real hard part is key management. That's the hard part. And then I learned about this product, Sub Rosa, and it improves key management. And so someone has figured out, learned from the Russians, and that the hard part is managing those keys, and that's what this does.
Yeah, well, we helped work a lot of that. And at the same time, we don't want to rip and replace what a lot of organizations, especially federal organizations, have done, because there is data at rest. The question is, how do you make it better? And our goal is to make it better.
Excellent. Well, let's take a break, come back. We'll talk more about secure channels, about cryptography, the federal government, and let's maybe apply some of that experience you have to some of the current challenges that my listeners have in data breaches and vulnerabilities and access and all kinds of different questions that pop up here frequently. You are listening to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy here on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. In the studio, Henry Sinkowitz, Chief Innovation and Revenue Officer for Secure Channels. Welcome back to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy here on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. In the studio, Henry Sinkowitz, Chief Innovation and Revenue Officer for a company called Secure Channels. I think most of my listeners have heard about Henry and all his adventures around town here in the security community worked for a lot of organizations, has real, real good hands-on experience with a lot of cyber problems that they, my listeners have. Brought him in here. We've been talking about all kinds of things, including secure channels. So here's, I'll just throw out this statistic, and you can dismiss it or run with it if you want. Doing some research for this program this morning, study, we've all seen the studies, 42% high-level federal managers say a data had a data breach in the last 6 months. Sounds high to me. I don't know. So true, false, and can your company help them at all?
Well, I think it's probably true.
Wow, that high.
And the reason I say that is that especially if you start rolling in some of the larger breaches, you kind of roll up way too many people. I mean, I've sat in too many audiences and I've sat on too many panels where you raise your hand on, okay, did you get hit with the Equifax breach? And everyone raises their hand. Have you gotten hit with the OPM breach? Almost everyone raises their hand. If you're like me, you have had a Yahoo mail account. I was one of the billion people or so who got hit with a Yahoo. And you recognize that all of this, so much of this stuff, so much of your digital persona is so, it's so easy to go and have it compromised. And in this era of sort of radical transparency and big data analytics that can track every keystroke you have, the question really at times is, how do you protect what you want to protect as you define it? Because part of it is you see people like DHS who have done some great work. I'm putting out some of the vulnerability stuff. So you look at the CVE stuff to check it. You look at the NIST cybersecurity framework, which is a great template for many things. You look at the working groups, especially in things like the financial community that have tried to put out really meaningful standards. You see some of the new guidelines that are coming out. And the question, and then obviously if you pivot a teeny bit over to the European Union, they've got a whole series of regulations under a thing called GDPR, General Data Protection Requirement. That means if you have a breach of an EU persona, a living person, your company could be subject to a 4% global gross revenue fine. I'm sorry, I don't know how many companies can really survive through that.
Mine can't.
No, I know mine couldn't. I mean, either me personally or secure channels.
And when you think about Equifax, you know, many govies, I talk to them all the time. Well, you know, there's so much better in the commercial. Wait a minute. Equifax was a bunch of losers that forgot to patch something that it was a known vulnerability, the way I understand it.
Yeah. I mean, I think there was a whole series of complexities. And again, I mean, I'm teaching the class at Georgetown, which has been a really, really enjoyable time. But I go in there and I actually complain at my students because I just want one week. Where I don't have a current event to start the class with.
Maybe Thanksgiving, huh?
Well, I don't want to say we're not really having class around Thanksgiving, but because we're supposed to have class that Wednesday. But I think we'll be Zooming that class out, and that's okay by me. But yeah, it's just every single day. So the question becomes, you look at all of the vendor hype, you look at everything around there, and the question becomes for a lot of companies, what can you really control? I mean, what part of your infrastructure that can you actually put something in that you can control and know that you are secure? You realize that the networks are the transmission vector for malware and advanced threats, so you've got to be careful there. You have defense in depth. I postulated in the book, The Art of Cyber Conflict, that you have to have a complete and total no-trust environment, that you can't. I mean, the internet was built in such a way that it was supposed to be this utopic garden, and that essentially has been proven to be a lie. And I don't mind saying that. I mean, there are people out in the valley who would vehemently disagree with me. And so you have to figure out, what can you actually control? What can you have your own organizational cyber agency for? Agency being responsiveness and the philosophical notion of you have to control it. You got to be responsible for it.
And can you actually control a colleague from not clicking on a phishing scam? I don't know if you can. A lot of people are vulnerable to that, and maybe you control the data itself.
Yeah. No, and I've seen some initial pieces of network obfuscation, trying to do essentially global whitelisting so that you know that it's safe. You see some of the newer technologies on how do you do impact zones and detonation chambers. But it's also fascinating, John, to watch the demographics, the trending in this space, because a lot of the malware APT type stuff, that threat vector is dropping because people are reverting back to traditional phishing. And I don't have the numbers in front of me.
Because it works.
I do. Because it works. And it's cheaper and it's easier. And as you're getting, you're baking security more into this environment more, it's becoming tougher for bad actors to pull stuff out. And so the question really goes with, like, why I'm focused here is that how do you give users and organizations a very straightforward way to secure their data in a meaningful way?
Let me pull a word from one of your old titles, assurance. Yep. You are an assurance executive. Yep. How can you assure someone the stuff is going to be safe?
Well, yeah. I mean, again, it goes back to that whole notion of the confidentiality, integrity, and availability. And assurance doesn't mean you get rid of all risk. You can't. We've all heard too many people pontificate saying, I mean, the only secure box is a box that's sitting there by itself, not doing anything. Well, that's great. I mean, it's also useless. So you've got to be able to go there. The question becomes, what is mission assurance or information assurance or operational assurance, however you may parse this out? And remember, in this new world, this new domain that we're moving into, this so-called cyber thing, we've got a concurrent physical virtual domain happening here. And that conflict of how do I go there? And there's a physical presence to some of these devices, but there's all of the other random connectiveness that's going on underneath. And so at the end of the day, are you going to be able to protect all of it? Or do you just figure out what inside your environment you believe you have to protect? And that's obviously mission-driven, business-driven. And I mean, corporations have a whole great deal of responsibility on some of this.
I have heard people on cybersecurity panels say, hey, bad guys are already in your network here, Henry. All you can possibly do is have a quick response and back up quickly and cross your fingers. And that may be good, but there's information in some of my listeners' networks that doesn't work for.
Well, yeah, no.
I don't want to name names.
I think I've seen some of these networks. I mean, remembering as the
DISA accreditor. You've seen something.
As the DISA accreditor, I mean, DISA has has an incredible footprint and does yeoman's work. They're running the NIPRNet, they're running the CIPRNet, they're running the transmission side of the JWICS fabric. They've run the satellites. I mean, John, we were talking earlier about satellites. I mean, talk about a whole paradigm twist that's going on there. You have the expectation that people are already in your environment. So the question is, what do you do to respond? And you know what? I've heard other people talking about the idea that they don't like this, but I'm a fan of doing things like hunting networks and sending actors someplace and letting them futz around somewhere else. I like poisoned wells.
Hi, I'm Henry. I like poisoned wells.
Well,
Have a drink.
Yeah, sorry. Yeah,
Have a drink.
I like the idea that here you go, you're going to steal my data. Well, that's good, but X percentage of my data is going to be bad. And for you, if you're trying to monetize it, guess what? You're downstream people. I mean, this is a multi-level marketing thing. I mean, let's talk about a pyramid scam. I mean, they're trying to sell this data to someone else. If a sizable percentage of that data is known to be bad, guess what? You've got a problem. And the people who are buying that data from you, they're not going to be happy with you. I mean, and I'm a fellow at the University of Houston's Borders Trade and Immigration Institute, which is a DHS Center of Excellence. Wow, I got that all out in one breath.
Everyone understood it, though. Yeah, Houston, makes sense.
Houston, I mean, no, they do some really fun things. But one of my colleagues there is actually working on a bunch of software that you can throw into your environment. And at the end of the day, if you go there and you're a bad actor and you use it, you steal all this data and you start opening up the zip files, you find out that, guess what? In those zip files, there's stuff that's about to corrupt your entire system. So, it's a very aggressive defensive stance. And I'm fine with that. If you're going to come into my house and take my stuff, guess what? I don't want you to have any value from what you have just taken. And by the way, I'm going to corrupt whatever you've done, wherever you're putting it.
A reverse Trojan horse, huh?
Yep. Yeah. And legally, I posit it's pretty straightforward.
Let's take a little break, come back. I'm going to talk about aging infrastructure and the impact on cybersecurity and maybe talk a little bit about training and user error also. You're listening to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy here on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. In the studio, Henry Sinkowitz, Chief Innovation and Revenue Officer for secure channels. Welcome back to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy here on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. In the studio, we have Henry Sinkowitz, Chief Innovation and Revenue Officer for a company called Secure Channels. Everyone knows Henry. You may not know this company. I went to their website, securechannels.com. I saw a bunch of brainiacs. I saw some people with some PhDs, and they're out in the valley, and they're doing these very complex things. And I said, it's almost like a thing. It's not a think tank, but they think deeply in the topics they cover, don't they?
Well, do you know what, John? It took a lot for me to go anywhere full time, and this is just really compelling, neat stuff. And quite frankly, I am challenged every day to learn something new. I've learned more about cryptography and encipherment stuff than I had ever expected in my life. And I used to be a CompSec custodian many years ago in the Army. Yeah, I got that part, but yeah, this is a different world, and it's really fascinating. And what we've come to realize is that you can do it right, you can do it wrong, and you got to figure out how you do it right.
Well, one aspect of my listeners' problem is phishing and cloaking scams and best practices and what a lot of people are kind of beating the drum and saying, well, we'll just toss in some automation and that'll, you know, what role does automation have in this? What role does automation have as far as patching and automatically encrypting systems? Does this fit in your world at all?
Yeah. So two slightly different topics. So let's talk about the automation and the vulnerability management stuff. If you talked to me 10 years ago, I was not a big fan of automated remediation. I mean, it's a place to do a man in the middle attack. Subsequent to that, I have become a huge, huge fan. There's just too much stuff out there.
Too quickly.
Yeah, it's all happening too fast. And IoT and the rest of these internet devices that are going to be embedded in all of our lives, quite frankly, you got to be able to figure out how to keep them up to date and moving along. When you start looking at a light switch and an internet-enabled light switch, well, I mean, a light switch has a 20-year, 25-year life expectancy. How am I doing patch management on a 25-year-old piece of hardware? It's really difficult. And the question becomes, how do you have visibility? I mean, I talk about it in the book, in my book, The Art of Cyber Conflict. I mean, how do you recognize, remediate, and then respond in turn? And so the question becomes, here, how do you use patching and automated vulnerability management to both recognize and remediate immediately? I mean, respondent in my world is a little bit more aggressive.
Well, let me toss out another fun fact. There's an article from a publication called The Hill. And it said that 61% of federal leaders say they have a problem with aging IT infrastructure. So does aging IT infrastructure protect an agency from attacks, or does it make it more vulnerable? Or there's the question. Well, this is so old, no one even knows how to code for this stuff.
Yeah, except it's so old that people have had plenty of time to figure out what's going
there's
on.
There's the counter argument.
There's
there,
the counter argument there. And remember, I originally came into the Defense Department in 2008. To drive innovation into the DISA data centers, and then that turned into cloud computing and a bunch of those other initiatives. So yeah, I am a big fan of you've got to routinely clean up your infrastructure. Again, John, using the house analogy, you go there and you perform routine maintenance on your HVAC system. I know I just had the guys come in to do it the other day. You replace the roof on a regular basis. You go there and clean and do the plumbing. These are the basic maintenance things. And if you look at the federal budget, we spend so much money on O&M. But what we don't do is we don't do O&M in a way to gracefully upgrade the system. So we end up doing these big shot over the moon things, which almost invariably fail. So, I mean, where you look at it, you have to continue to say, how do I slowly, incrementally improve my environment? And at the same time, how am I documenting the code? Because we hit this syndrome of, I don't have enough programmers who actually understand the underlying technologies. I don't have enterprise architectures. I don't understand where the data flows are. And that becomes the ways that bad actors get into the environment.
ISACA says 37% of people, again, statistics, only one in four candidates are qualified to work in the cybersecure environment.
Yeah.
Let's throw that another challenge for my listeners. By the way, you got no money, you can't hire people, and it's rapidly changing. Put everything in the cloud, make everything open, and close everything up. Yeah. Next question.
Well, and the thing is, then you find some people who will contend that they're really smart in this stuff, and you realize all they are script kiddies and button pushers where, okay, I've got to go there and I need to do a penetration test. Well, all I know how to do is push the button on the automated system. I don't quite understand what's underneath all of it. The Defense Department is doing some great work. I mean, and the question is going to be, are they going to be able to keep all of these people that they're doing for the cyber protection workforce and the cyber protection teams? Because they're pouring a lot of money in each one of those service members. And they become really high valuable candidates for other organizations very rapidly. So the National Guard Reserve combination has been a great thing. I mean, I hate to use the term a thing of beauty, but potentially just a really good way to go there and mix and match. The other part is that you can go there and you can chase all those certificates, but you actually really know what you're doing. And so the notion of how do you have hands-on training? How do you have operational training inside a specific environment? How do you go there and allow people to actually fully understand risk management, risk mitigation, while understanding code and enterprise architecture? It takes a long time.
You know, years ago, I used to work on my car. I'd get the Chilton manual out and say, here's how to take out the water pump. Bang, bang, bang. It looked real simple. And I could pass a true-false test and a ABC test. I could do it. Now, when I actually did it one time, I burned myself on the muffler. They didn't tell me the muffler. And you burn yourself in the muffler. Let's apply that to cybersecurity. You could burn yourself on something that doesn't fit the ABC test.
Well, no. I mean, and again, my first car was an MGB.
you burned yourself a lot.
Well, no. I mean, my dad and I pulled out the short block one time. We put the thing back in because we had to replace the clutch. Yeah, no one told us in the manual you could put the clutch in the wrong way.
Ooh.
And so we put it in, to fix it, and we pulled the short block all the way out because that happens. And the problem in the cyber world is that it is very atemporal. It's aspatial. You don't know if you make a mistake today, will you have that problem? Will that problem come back and haunt you in 4 or 5 months or 4 or 5 years? I mean, in the spatial nature of the bang to the click to boom here is very different. You can have someone go there and start injecting and doing a DDoS attack or some other bad behavior across the world in a matter of milliseconds, unlike traditional force projection. And we do, the U.S. military does the greatest job in the world, but it still takes 18 hours to take a deployed unit from Fort Bragg and drop him into a theater of operations. There's a time distance thing that is completely and totally gone here. And you don't know when you're going to make that mistake. So yeah, does automating stuff help at least get everything into a homogeneous environment that you at least will know what your threat profiles look like, what your protection profiles look like, and hopefully you're able to go there and resolve the problem. And holding the vendors accountable to continuously giving you the upgrades and patches, yeah, and forcing that into the environment.
Well, Henry, over at Redskins Park, they do the two-minute drill all the time before a game. So I'm going to give you a two-minute drill here. I'm going to throw out some words, and you riff with them. Everyone comes in, talks about artificial intelligence and machine learning and blockchain. And, you know, once we figure out that'll be the answer for everything, isn't it? This is very closely related to encryption. So is that the – where would blockchain apply for my listeners?
So blockchain is a different part of the problem set. Mm-hmm. Blockchain is very much in that notion of authentication and a trusted. So, John, you send me something. I've used the blockchain and methodology. I go there and I know that you sent it to me. That is just one part of this entire game. Encryption adds another level of security that complements the blockchain and the notion that I have a trusted ledger.
That's so. People throw these terms all the time. Crystal ball time. You know, I used to have a crystal ball here and someone broke it. Maybe me, but someone broke it. So I'm going to toss you the figurative crystal ball here. 4 or 5 years down the road, do you think there's going to be an event that's going to force people to knock on your door? What's going to motivate people to make big changes? We know budgets are going down. I keep thinking there's going to have some kind of an event. I don't know. Maybe.
Hopefully we don't have a cyber.
I don't want one.
Yeah. None of us want it. And the problem becomes, I mean, you look at it and you say, okay, it's so easy to take some of the infrastructure down. And DHS is working like mad with the mission partners on the civilian side, on the commercial side, saying we're going to be able to go there and resolve some of this. Where do I see the next 5 years? Next 5 years, I see obviously a promise and a peril. I see this migration to automation. I see the migration to security going really well. I see the peril that we may walk into a world that we don't quite understand what we're getting. And the notion of privacy and individual rights gets tempered a great deal.
The unintended consequences. That's the lesson that we learn from history all the time. Yeah. We're running out of time here, Henry. You've been listening to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy here on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. I'd like to thank my guest, Henry Sienkiewicz, Chief Innovation and Revenue Officer for Secure Channels. Thank you, Henry.
Thank you, John.
You've been listening to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy, Managing Partner at the Oakmont Group. Download this show or any of our weekly programs anytime at federalnewsradio.com. Search Federal Tech Talk.